Hello, friends, and welcome to Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. I'm Dean Welty, along with Rita Dunaway and our very special guest, Chris Friend from the Family Foundation, and I'll be introducing him in just a minute. But we'll be talking about what happened to some important bills that came up in the Virginia General Assembly that ended just a couple of weeks ago, and the clash of values that often erupted around these bills. Those bills address some core issues like the sanctity of life, religious freedom, the education of our children, and yes, immigration, and many, many more. In fact, Chris will correct me if I'm wrong, but members of the General Assembly, 40 senators and 100 delegates, looked at over 2,000, maybe even 3,000 bills during their short 46-day session. Now, here's why it matters to all of us. The law is a civil guide to moral behavior, especially for the unchurched who have no other guide. Therefore, if our legislators pass good laws, we all win. But if they pass bad laws, we lose. So now, Chris, we're going to turn to you to put all of this together. You've been with the Family Foundation of Virginia since 2002, I believe. And Chris is now the Vice President for Government Relations and Communications. And in fact, Chris, I have to say this yet, in recognition of his outstanding service in this ongoing clash of values, the Valley Family Forum was pleased to present him with the Wilberforce Award at our annual God and Country Dinner last year. So, Chris, let's get started. And for those of our listeners who may have missed your earlier visits with us, just give us a quick reminder about the Family Foundation, some of your priority issues, how you work, and what your personal role is in this effort.
Dean and Rita, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Family Foundation works to empower families to apply biblical worldview and founding principles to politics and culture. Basically, what we're trying to do is exactly what you were talking about, bring biblical truths, biblical values, biblical principles into this realm of public policy. You hear the old saying, you can't legislate morality, but the fact is that somebody's morality is the basis for every law that we have. And it's just a matter of which worldview is behind all of the laws that we have. So the Family Foundation, we lobby the General Assembly, advocate for these principles, seek to pass laws that protect, defend, and advance those principles, and to defeat laws that are threats to that. But we also, and just as importantly, or maybe more importantly, seek to empower and activate citizens and pastors who have these beliefs and these principles to be engaged, to be involved, to vote according to these principles, to influence their elected officials according to these principles, to engage in this process. And we believe that it's part of being part of citizenship, part of discipleship, that being a good citizen is as much of an importance as being a good family member or a good church member, because government is one of the institutions that God gave us.
Yes. Well, Chris, you were with us on the program just 2 months ago to talk about some of the issues and bills that you were working on to promote in the Virginia General Assembly this session. We refer to them as values bills. That session is now over, so give us an update. What happened to these values bills that you were working on? Did they pass or fail?
Rita, for the most part, we saw some success, kind of what we expected to see. Our goal this year, knowing that we have a very adversarial governor to these issues, was to make sure that we get as many things to his desk, even though he is going to veto them, to continue to educate legislators and the public on these important issues. So I think some of our most important bills, we once again passed a bill that would protect religious charities and schools from being discriminated against by state government, by perhaps denying grants, contracts, those kind of things. We saw Governor McAuliffe just before session issue an executive order that basically singles out religious charities to be discriminated against because they don't agree with his definition of marriage. So talking about imposing morality, he's trying to impose his morality on religious charities in order to participate in government contract programs and such. So we got that to his desk again. We had a bill that would redirect funding, taxpayer funding, away from Planned Parenthood. and two more comprehensive local community health care centers. Another bill that we passed last year got to the governor's desk, did that again this year, something I think is, with all the health care debate right now, is a very dominant issue. We simply don't believe an organization that has a history of breaking the law, a history of fraud, of deceiving and misleading, mm-hmm. Women should be receiving taxpayer money. Okay. So we successfully, we were able to do that. Now, the governor celebrates that veto. That bill was done early enough in session that he's already had his veto. He had a celebration out front of the state executive mansion, his residence. To celebrate the veto, but we still were able to talk about what Planned Parenthood really is. Mm-hmm. And we did some polling in January on that issue, and more than half of Virginians, it's around 54% of Virginians, support redirecting funding away from Planned Parenthood. Mm-hmm. We saw a lot of success on parental choice in education, with virtual schools and charter school reform and other education options that were successful. And then finally, I think a bill that we didn't talk about probably before session because I wasn't sure if it was going to be done again, but one of your Valley legislators again put in a bill that would give parents opportunity to know that their child is going to be taught sexually explicit material in class and have the option of choosing a different material for their child. A bill that passed last year, this year was narrowed. The definition of sexually explicit was made very specific, and we were able to pass that bill and get it to the governor as well.
It sounds like you've had an uphill battle, though, on some of those. And as you know, the Valley Family Forum also developed a list of 17 priority bills that we were tracking and promoting. And it just intrigues me. First of all, fewer than half of those got passed. And it's just frustrating for us, and I know for you, why aren't more of these bills passed? Now, for example, just to give some examples, the top ones on our list were five bills related to the sanctity of life. Four of those bills never even made it out of committee. And it bewilders me why they can't even be brought to the floor. They were all in the House also, which we consider to be a very friendly chamber to sanctity of life issues. So let's just start with that. Why aren't more of these bills passed? And then to be clear, who generally supports these values bills and who opposes them?
It's fair in talking about these issues. I think it's important to note. I mean, I went through some of the things we were successful with. There were other things that we were also be able to pass, and there were a lot of very bad things that we were able to defeat. But there were things like some life bills that didn't find success while we were able to on Planned Parenthood, things like Being Capable Unborn Child Act was enacted on. And Dean, some of that is legislators who are still fearful of sort of the hysteria that they faced years ago when they were passing pro-life legislation, mm-hmm. And then they saw the post-election hysteria this year, and I think they got a little bit nervous. But to be honest with you, on some of those, there was concern and I have to be careful because I don't want to give away kind of some of the things that we face because I frankly don't want our opponents to be aware of what we're trying to deal with. But there were some issues with a couple of those bills that we need to correct and make sure are okay when we come in with them in the next session. Okay. And we were fearful in a couple of cases that even if we were able to pass the bills, they were not going to pass in a form that we believed was strong enough. Mm-hmm. And instead of ending up at a weaker position at the end of session, there were some that thought, you know what, waiting until we have assurances that these bills aren't going to be watered down is more important than passing something that doesn't do what we intend it to do. And our fear would be that we would start next year at a weaker position.
Chris, I want to follow up on that, though. Just in general terms, a lot of this is just partisan bickering, isn't it?
Some of it is. Absolutely. Yeah. Some of it is when you're in the House, you can lose some Republicans and still pass. When you have 66 Republicans out of 100, obviously, you can lose 15 and still pass a bill. In the Senate, it isn't quite that easy. It's only 21, so you only have to lose one, and you don't get crossover votes anymore. There was a time when I first got here where there were pro-life Democrats that voted for these bills. They just don't exist anymore.
Well, and Chris, just in general terms, if I recall, in your latest voter report card, Democrats in both chambers, both the Senate and the House, averaged a score of only 17 out of a possible 100 points on these issues. And in contrast, the Republicans scored just over 90.
It's very true, and there just isn't that kind of crossover anymore on some issues. On some there is. On some of the parental and school choice issues, we're starting to see one or two Democrats cross over and vote in favor of those. But on the life, marriage, religious liberty issues, it is a very partisan situation, which is unfortunate because these principles should be universal.
Well, I just want to add one more thing and then turn it over to Rita. But you mentioned the governor and his vetoes, and you mentioned his standing in front of the governor's mansion bragging about being a brick wall against any efforts to defund Planned Parenthood. That is just almost beyond credulity.
Well, that's actually what I wanted to ask you about, Chris, is how do you explain the partisan divide on some of these issues, and in particular, this issue of funding Planned Parenthood? The reason that just astounds me that our governor would be so fond of Planned Parenthood is because it is well known and well documented that the root of Planned Parenthood is a root of racism and even eugenics, and I just can't make sense of it. How do you explain that?
It is a remarkable
hypocrisy.
You know, how do I explain it? I'm glad I can't get into their heads to figure this out.
Yeah.
But this is telling. This is telling, Rita and Dean. That week that he vetoed that bill, the governor weekly puts out a top five for the week. In other words, what were his top five accomplishments for that week? What are the things that he was most proud of? And that Friday, number one thing that he was proud of that week was vetoing that legislation. Lower on the list was feeding hungry children and taking care of homelessness. So in his worldview, making sure Planned Parenthood is funded and abortions are taking place is a higher priority than making sure hungry children are fed. That was what he put out in a press release.
Wow.
That's what his office put out. And I think it's their loyalty to that. Look, let's face it. He got a lot of money from Planned Parenthood and support during the elections.
Yeah.
In general, his party gets millions of dollars in support from Planned Parenthood. It's a $1 billion national organization that is a huge election budget. I was unfortunately sitting in the dentist chair this morning having to watch Cecile Richards, the president of Planned Parenthood defender organization, on CBS this morning. And I hesitate to say defend because they didn't ask her a tough question once. Mm-hmm. They basically kept putting up the statistics that have been proven wrong about the organization.
Mm-hmm.
It has a great deal of power. But you know what, Dean? And Rita, we have to counter that. Every meeting where a life bill came up this session, when they were, Planned Parenthood had 10, 20, 30, 40 people in the room. We tried to get people out to stand outside the mansion to protest, and we've got about 20 people on that one day. But you know what? Part of the problem we have right now is our folks are sitting at home, or sitting in the pews, and they're not doing what they need to do. And they need to get engaged, and they need to show up, and they need to make noise, and they need to be at their legislator's door, at their legislator town halls, all of these things, asking, why didn't you do this?
Yeah.
Or why did you do this?
Yeah.
He who shows up wins.
Yeah.
And right now, you know, our opposition is very motivated to show up.
Yes.
Hey, Chris, we're going to talk later in the program about the role of the churches and pastors, but I'd like to get back to the legislators themselves. And I just want your opinion. How does our own Valley delegation fit into this very volatile clash of values in the General Assembly? Are they supportive of these values? Do they oppose them? Do they abstain? Many of our listeners may not be aware of that. And in addition, do they have defined leadership roles in legislature?
Yeah, you guys have some real jewels in the Valley and in the legislators that you have. And as I looked down our list of bills that we supported this year, in particular priorities or issues that were of high importance, so many of them were patroned by legislators from the Valley. Delegate Steve Landis, who carried not only the bill on parental notification for sexually explicit materials in schools, but also carried a very important bill on free speech on public college campuses this year. So he had two high priority bills. Well, actually three, because I think he also had a charter school reform bill. So I mean, he was taking the lead in those areas. Of course, Delegate Ben Klein, co-chair of Conservative Caucus down here, carried the Planned Parenthood defunding bill and has always been a leader. We had Delegate Klein speak at an event during session, and I actually went back and looked at his voting record since he's been here, and I realized that he and I arrived in Richmond about the same time. His first full session was 2003, and that was my first lobbying for the Family Foundation. And since that time, with all the elected officials that have been through here, there's only three who have a 100% voting record with the Family Foundation over that period of time, and one of those is Delegate Klein.
Wow.
For
Yay,
that
Delegate
long period
Klein.
Of time, for those 15 years. And, Delegate Dickey Bell, who carried some very important legislation this year trying to reform the discipline system in our public schools, and Delegate Bell is just so solid on so many issues, and you've got Todd Gilbert and Markovich. I mean, the list goes on and on. Tony Well, we count on them for their leadership, for their votes, and for carrying these bills. So you guys have some folks to be very proud of.
Yes, we like our delegation here in the Valley. We're very proud of them.
Well, in fact, we gave Ben Klein our Wilberforce Award a couple of years ago. You gave Todd Gilbert the Legislator of the Year Award that same time. But I wanted to ask about Todd. Did he not get a promotion in the leadership role in the House?
He did, with the announced retirement of the Speaker of the House, Bill Howell, and the House Republican Caucus, assuming they are the majority power after this election, which, they in all likelihood still will be, voted to elevate the current majority leader, Kirk Cox, to the Speaker's position. And Delegate Gilbert, who's the, deputy majority leader, was voted to become the new majority leader.
Wow.
So that's a obvious recognition of his leadership and all that he's done over the years. He's been key to so many issues, particularly religious liberty for us over the years. And so it is another recognition of just his importance up here.
Yeah, that's great. We love Todd, too. Well, Chris, in addition to your work during the General Assembly, what are some of the other challenges you deal with throughout the year? For example, there's been this bathroom bill controversy in Fairfax. There's the case of the transgender student that the Supreme Court just kicked back to the Fourth Circuit, and then the abortion clinic regulations that keep getting undermined. What is your role or the role of the Family Foundation in all of those issues?
That's a great question, Rita, and it makes me think of the first days I was here where summertime was a little bit quieter and we could plan and do all kinds of things. There's no quiet time anymore at the Family Foundation.
Yeah.
It is just a constant battle. We've been, you mentioned the transgender issue, and obviously the last couple of weeks we've seen major changes in the Trump administration's interpretation of the word sex in federal law, which has had a trickle-down effect to the court case. And we've been involved in school board battles from Gloucester to Stafford to Fairfax to just all over the Commonwealth, Loudoun, where school boards have been considering this issue. And our legal counsel here has testified in school boards across Virginia, and we've sent them some legal guidance. So that's an ongoing issue, and every parent who has a child in public school needs to be watching their local school board, because you know, right now school boards feel like they have the power to do anything they want. There's another key case here in the state Supreme Court that's going to determine just how much authority school boards have on that issue. And I think we're going to have a ruling probably sometime late summer. And then on the abortion center health and safety standards issue that you mentioned, that's been a ongoing issue now for going on 6 years. We passed the bill originally, I believe, in 2011, and the new standards came out a while after that. And since he's been in office, Governor McAuliffe, one of, again, his primary goals was to scale back those health and safety standards, which he did through the Board of Health by appointing very pro-abortion members, including a former member of the Planned Parenthood Board of Directors, to the Board of Health. Unfortunately, we believe for the governor, that right now, by the way, is in a public comment period, and when that public comment period ends, those new watered-down standards will take effect theoretically. But during this process, the governors and the Board of Health violated state law multiple times. Regulatory process is very specific, and there's a state law that guides it, the Administrative Process Act, and they violated that multiple times, and we believe that's ripe for a lawsuit. So I would be watching in the next couple of weeks. You may be hearing more about that issue in the next couple of weeks. My sources are telling me that there may be something coming along the way. So just keep your eyes out.
Okay. Thanks for the heads up.
You know, Chris, it just reveals the hypocrisy of the governor who claims to stand for women, and yet he undermines the very regulations that would protect women in those clinics at least as much as possible. It just boggles the mind.
But the blindness that they have on this issue is remarkable to me, because we can literally read to them from health and safety inspections showing equipment that isn't sterilized, literally has blood on it. Doctors and nurses who don't re-glove and wash hands between patients in multiple facilities, lack of sanitation, lack of sterilization, lack of infection control. And they will respond to that, say, well, you haven't found anything that tells me that we need these standards.
Well, Chris, we just want to bring this home now. You mentioned that you really need a stronger voice from the people. So what we seem to be stuck between two groups that can't agree on much of anything in the General Assembly and throughout our culture. So what can we do to help at the local, state, and national level in promoting these important values? You already mentioned being clear to our school boards of what these values are and how important they are. Is there anything else you'd like to suggest?
And include churches in that,
yes,
please.
You know, you've got to be connected to groups like the Valley Family Forum, like the Family Foundation, like, you know, National Groups, Family Research Council, or whatever group that you want to be attached to find out what's going on, to be aware of what's happening, and take the time to be engaged. I really, you know, and also don't be discouraged. I think that we live in a culture that expects immediate gratification, that if I do A, B is going to happen, and that's just not true in the political realm. There is no immediate satisfaction in the political realm. Even if you win an election, that's the first step. There's accountability and there's encouragement, and people have to be in it. It's like, it's a form of evangelism in a way. You don't take the gospel to somebody once and then say, oh, they didn't do it, I'm never going to do that again. You continually do that in various ways, and you take time and you recognize that it's long term. Well, changing our culture is not going to happen overnight. You guys know that. changing the political realm isn't going to happen overnight. It is a daily, constant struggle, and you've got to be willing to do that. And people have to hold their legislator. It's simple as going to the local town hall when your legislator has them to thank them for the good votes.
Yeah.
Understand that, especially the folks out where you are, who almost all of them are 100%ers or pretty close to it.
Mm-hmm.
They are getting hammered by folks on the other side. And, you know, that wears on you when you never hear encouragement.
Yes.
And so you've got to be willing to encourage when they do things correctly. Yes, you need to let them know when you disagree. But they do so much good, you really need to encourage them. You've got to be part of that organization and that community that helps you do that.
Chris, we only have a minute left, but I just wanted to follow up. Rita asked about the churches, and I remembered our dinner last year. You pleaded with pastors to speak out on these issues. Why is that so important? How do you respond to the argument that churches shouldn't get involved in politics?
Well, churches are involved in politics. They just don't even know it. Every single person in their church is either voting correctly, incorrectly, or not participating, and they're doing it based on what they're hearing from the pulpit. And if they're not hearing something, they're basing it on that. So you're either influencing them to do good or you're not. It's hard for us to ask politicians to do what pastors won't.
Mm-hmm.
And pastors play such a key role in creating disciples who understand biblical worldview and then apply that to every area of life. Pastors have to take that responsibility seriously so that those citizens then go out and do the right thing. And you can't say that in every other realm, but don't worry about politics. It's you know, Jesus owns it all.
Yes.
And we've got to be involved in all of it, and we can't compartmentalize this out of that aspect of it. So pastors play a huge role, and pastors need to be visiting with their elected officials too.
Yes.
And encouraging them and talking to them and influencing them. They have a great amount of influence.
Absolutely.
Well, Chris, just to wind this up, do you have any events or issues that we should know about? And for example, we have a dinner coming up, our annual dinner on May 19. We want our listeners to know about that. Anything you have that you want to tell us about?
Well, right now, you know, the governor needs to hear some folks on the bills that are on his desk. There's still things there that we're waiting for his action.
Yes.
If they go to familyfoundation.org and click the banner that's our Legislative Action Center, they can go through there to contact the governor. Regardless of what we think he might do, we want to inundate his office with what he ought to do.
Yes.
Great. Thanks a lot, Chris.
Well, this concludes our program about the clash of values in the Virginia General Assembly with our special guest, Chris Friend, Vice President of the Family Foundation of Virginia. If you would like to listen to this program again or share it with your friends, go to our website at valleyfamilyforum.org and click on the link to Crossroads on the homepage. We want to thank our sponsors at Blue Ridge Chimney Services and the dental practice of Scott Dunaway. And we thank so many of you, too, for your prayers, your encouragement, and your financial support. If you'd like to make a tax-deductible donation to help keep Crossroads on the air, you can do so by check to Crossroads at P.O. Box 881, Harrisonburg 22803. Thank you again for joining us. I'm Rita Dunaway with Dean Welty and engineer Robbie Meadows, inviting you to join us again next week at the Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. Until then, have a great week putting your faith into action.
Rejoice, 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 rej